Going closer, and this is an excellent time to do a presentation on step three because I'm like this. I was sitting at dinner and I looked at my clock nonchalantly because I knew we had a lot of time and it was 6:15, and I didn't turn down university. And Maine is one lane, and the person in front of me wanted to go 22 miles an hour. So it was definitely a third step kind of experience. I love the third step. It's one of my favorites. And I like it, first of all, because I don't have to do it perfectly. Like, you know, I've heard so often that step one has to really, you have to really get step one. And step two and three are like steps for dummies because I don't have to get them down. I don't have to get them perfect. Step two talks about coming to believe, and it's a process. And step three just says I made a decision. And there's a story, a step three story that I really like. There were three frogs on a lily pad, and one of them decided to jump. How many frogs are left? Three. Because the third frog just decided to jump. We don't hear the splash until step seven. And that's the good news. Once I make that decision, I have the following steps to build my faith and build my skills so that I'm actually able to let go. And I don't have to let go of everything. And Beth is going to share a little exercise she did on step three that helped her. But I did my first step three, and I gave up everything except my son, my house, and my truck. I didn't think God needed to take care of those things. I was perfectly able to take care of them, and besides, I was afraid of what he might do. Hi, Tucson.
Hello. Sorry we're late.
Okay, we're just going to go ahead with the Sharon. You can introduce yourself later, okay?
Okay.
Thanks. It was about 3 years later that I finally did another step three, and I gave up my house and my car and my truck and my son. I found it interesting that years later to reflect that my son is an alcoholic drug addict who went to prison. My truck was totaled, and my house I sold for a great deal more money than I bought it. And I don't know why my higher power was so kind about my house when he didn't do such a good job with my son. It may have been, that my son decided to use drugs and alcohol. It may have been that it wasn't my higher power that totaled my truck, but it was the woman behind the wheel. That would be me. But you know what? I saved a ton of time worrying about those three things because a lot of days I really did make that decision to turn over my truck, my son, and my house to the care of my higher power. The word care I kept forgetting about. When I worked the third step, I mean, years into recovery, I kind of thought of, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to God. And the picture I had was of me standing at the edge of an abyss, letting go, and the things would fall down into this canyon and never be seen again. And instead, I forgot about that, the care of God. And now I picture me dropping that stuff, just opening my hand, and my higher power catching it in his hands. I don't know if my higher power has hands, but just catching it and loving on my son and loving on me as I struggled through keeping my house or keeping my truck or loving my son, just loving on me and being with me. There's a speaker that I love. His name is John A., and he has the best third step story that I've ever heard. He was in AA, sorry, He was in another program. And he was on his step four, and he was living in the Sheraton. Well, actually, he was living in the parking lot of the Sheraton in his car. He was homeless. And he was working his program. He had turned his will and his life over to God, and things were not happening for him. And one of the old members of the meeting went to him, and he said, John, you really have to do a third step. And John said, I don't understand what you're talking about. I did a third step. I knelt on my knees and I said the prayer with the sponsor, and the old guy said, John, you're going to have to really do a third step. And John was sitting in his car. It was the middle of the night. He was getting a cold. He knew he was going to die, just laying out there at his home in the Sheraton, in the parking lot of the Sheraton. And he was scared to death. And finally, he did that thing that you'll come to recognize, that you may all already recognize, that letting go. I can't do it anymore. I know I can't do this. I might as well let you have it, because I really have no alternative. And so he woke up the next morning, and he hadn't frozen to death. And he was walking down the street looking for quarters, dimes, and nickels like he always did. And he didn't find any quarters, dimes, and nickels, but he found a job, and he found the perfect job for him. He found a job washing dishes in a cafe. And the good news about it was he got 3 square meals a day, which he wouldn't have gotten if he got a job as an insurance salesman, you know. And he was set with his 3 meals, and he was sitting in an inner group, and the phone rang, and somebody said, is John there? And he said, well, yes, this is John. And he said, John, this is your friend Fred, and your parents told me you might be here. And I have this problem. I'm building a subdivision outside of town, and I think somebody's stealing from me. And I was hoping that you might be able to move into one of the houses and keep an eye out on it for things. And John said, well, I think I might. That doesn't always happen on step three. But something wonderful always happens. It may not be right away, but I really am coming to believe that wonderful things happen faster and faster depending on how completely I let go of things. I don't have the big picture anymore. I don't understand what needs to be done. I only understand my little view of the world. And when I quit trying to control things, I'm going to give you a picture. I don't know how many of you have kids and you've been on the phone and your kid is at you and all over you, and he wants a cookie and he wants this and he wants that, and you're trying to talk on the phone. And that's, I'm sort of the little kid sometimes. God's on the phone trying to do the deal, and I'm harassing him with my attempts to control him. And when I do step three, I forget about the cookies. And I go and play, and marvelous things happen. Marvelous things happen that have nothing to do with me. I told you that step three doesn't have to be done perfectly, that it's a decision. A decision that may be driven by the fact that I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do anyway. Might as well let somebody else do it. So how do I figure out if I've gotten step three, and how do I work on step three? The questions will help you a lot to get a handle on how to move through, how to move into trusting your higher power and letting your higher power hold on to some of this stuff. But Beth did an exercise that really helped her. I asked her if she would share it, and she said she would, so here's Beth.
Hi, this is Beth, recovering COSA.
Hi, Beth.
The list, right? Let me just go over the list. So I created, first I went through and really broke down the meaning of step three.
Oh, sure.
First, I went through the step three itself and just tried to make sure I understood the meaning. And the thing for me that was really hard was turning over my will. It felt like turning over kind of my body and soul and everything, and it was just really, really hard. And it was probably, for what Claudia said, it was just trusting my higher power. So when I went through, I created a list of things that I wanted to turn over or possibly wanted to turn over. And I put a list of items with two columns, and one was ready and one was not ready. And I started to put through, that, write down that list, and I started to just check off what was I ready to turn over, and some things came really easy. For instance, like worries about my sons. They're adults. Mm-hmm. I felt really comfortable after working step two that I could let go of that. I could think about them and care about them and, you know, hope that everything's okay, but I knew I was ready to turn over. So I took a check and marked off in the ready column. And then, let's say, next relationship. I do want to be in a relationship in the future, but I don't want to be the one deciding. it's brought me pain in the past, so I just thought, you know what, I'm ready to turn that over. But when I started to go into things that were always where I had power or thought I had control, that it started to get a little squirrely for me to turn over. And the things that always seemed to go well were my career, my job, and decisions. I was the one always kind of making those turns. So could I turn my desire to be at the next level or my entire job to a higher power? And I went, absolutely not. Put that in the not ready column, because I thought, why would I turn that over to anybody else? I'm the one making the decision. And then some other things that I put down is just the death of loved ones. Could I turn that over to a higher power? And I thought, you know, I have no control over that. I can turn that worry over. But could I really just leave all outcomes to a higher power? And I went right over to the not ready column and said, no, that's crazy to me. I could not do that. But really when I talked about this with my sponsor, I really had to look at everything and said, do I have the power today or the control over those decisions? So my job, do I have the control today whether I get to the next level or whether I get to, no, it's someone else, it's my boss, or it's someone else that has to assess whether I'm ready or what I'm going to do, you know, let's say if I interview for a job or whatever. It's not me making the decision. I can only be as prepared for it. And someone else is making that decision. So when I really broke down all of these and looked, I said, you know what? It was my fallacy that I ever had control over these things. I thought I was in control over those things, but I'm really not. So I immediately started to look at each one, and it started to just easily shift. I'm ready to turn it over. It doesn't feel as easy, but I can mentally understand how I don't have control over it now. So now it's just a matter of practice and trust and slowly moving in that direction. But I could actually write down just about anything and say, I don't think I had control over those things in the first place. So it's much easier.
Thanks, Beth.
So what happens if you have some things in your life and you still have control over them, or you have the illusion of control, right? And step three for me is all about making the decision to give up the illusion of control. I'm not giving up anything real. Still, if I would talk to my son a certain way, I'm sure he would see it my way. And if I'm not ready to give up certain things because they mean so much to me, I can still move ahead if I haven't given up everything in my life. Step three is a process step, and the steps that follow will build the skills and the trust and the things that you need to start giving over everything. Can I give over everything? I was on Main Street, and there was only one dang lame, and I was running late. So maybe not. Maybe I can't give up everything. And it's okay, because I'm a work in progress. I'm a work in progress. But it helps to remember that I'm not in control, and it helps to remember that my higher power has my back. The more I believe my higher power has my back, the quicker I can turn things over in my life. I think the only other thing I want to tell you about step three is that when you finish step three, you have a huge, huge tool. You have the 1-2-3 waltz.